On Mondays, we read from your email. Our show on appropriate and inappropriate cell phone behavior prompted quite a few responses. Karen Evans, a professor at Ohio University, offered this warning. We've discovered that students use cell phones for cheating on tests, either to call someone for the answers or to retrieve notes they've loaded. Yes, we were the last to know. I wonder how long it took their high school teachers to notice. And James Minista has an idea to insulate the public from private phone calls. I advocate the construction and proliferation of large wooden boxes with folding doors, fans, and inside lights where people could take calls without being a nuisance. These would be called telephone booths. During our show last week on the anniversary of the Trinity bomb test, we spoke with one of the men on the photographic team at Alamogordo. Listener Ann Smith Denman sent us this story of her family's involvement with that atomic bomb. Although we didn't know it at the time, my father was responsible for placing the plutonium in the test bomb, having worked as a metallurgist in the refinement of plutonium at Los Alamos. My mother, brother, and I, age 7, were with our aunt and cousins at a family summer place in Michigan, ready to set off on an expedition, when my mother heard a news report of a large explosion in the New Mexico desert. With minor explanation, she begged off our trip and many years later told us that she'd been glued to the radio for further news. She did not know what was being done at Los Alamos. My father observed strict secrecy, as did almost all of the scientists, but like the other spouses, she had strong suspicions that a weapon was being produced. Only years later did she tell us anything about her day alone by the radio. Finally, our show on adults with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, brought in a slew of questions, and joining us now to help answer some that we didn't get time to answer on the program is NPR health policy correspondent Joanne Silberner. Always nice to have you on the show.
Thank you, Neil.
Our first question comes from Wendy in Laramie, Wyoming. She wanted to know what the symptoms are in less severe cases of ADHD in adults.
Well, it's not clear that this is graded by severity. I think you either have it or you don't. And with diagnosing adult ADHD, it's generally a carryover from childhood ADHD. So the first thing that the therapist is going to want to know is, what were you like as a kid? In fact, they even will, you know, if your parents are still around or someone who knew you as a child is still around, they'll sometimes talk to that person just to get a sense of it. So the symptoms are basically pretty similar to the symptoms in kids, just a real inability to pay attention. The difference with adults is that they've developed coping mechanisms by that point.
So it might be hard to find them sometimes. Adam in Portland, Oregon asked, how do stimulants work on the brain to alleviate symptoms of ADHD? It seems counterintuitive.
That's a great question. One of the theories about ADHD is that parts of the brain are understimulated. So by treating that understimulation, you can get things a little bit more back to normal. In fact, there's some very interesting studies that have been going on recently with doing imaging of the brain, and you can actually see areas of the brain in people with ADHD that just don't seem to be acting the way they are in other people.
One listener was concerned about the likelihood of passing ADHD on to a child. Is there a hereditary component to this condition?
Yeah, there's definitely a genetic component. It doesn't mean it has to be in your family in order to get it, and doesn't mean that if it's in your family, you'll automatically get it. And one thing I would say to her, there are no gene or genes identified yet. It's not diagnosable that way. But, you know, given that she's worried about it, she ought to know that a good pediatrician can pick it up early, and this is a treatable condition.
And finally, Judith in Wichita, Kansas wrote, my daughter, a recent grad of the University of Virginia, was diagnosed with ADD after several frustrating years of problems focusing, distraction, impulsiveness. A very big part of the success she's currently experiencing in dealing with ADD is weekly meetings with a psychologist who's helping her with strategies to deal with her ADD. The medicines alone would clearly not have provided the same level of improvement. Do many people with this condition get talk therapy as well as drugs?
Well, they should. A very big study of about 600 kids, very extensive. It compared drugs plus psychotherapy alone, and then nothing at all. And really, they found in every way the combination was best, the combination of both drugs and psychotherapy, and it even allows the use of lower doses of the drugs, which is good.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Joanne Silberner is NPR's health policy correspondent.